Our second lesson is from the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. Many scholars think that the book of Hebrews may have been an ancient Christian sermon. And the preacher of Hebrews certainly knew the stories of the Old Testament very well, because in these three verses, the preacher is going to refer to the story that Kathy just read. And so this is from Hebrews 13, which is near the conclusion of the preacher's sermon. He's exhorting the people how they might act. So this is Hebrews 13, starting at verse 1. Let mutual affection continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them, those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It seems like several times in my ministry, there have been major news events on a Friday or Saturday that have prompted me to substantially rewrite the sermon. The manuscript or the notes that I had prepared during the week somehow just don't quite seem like they're going to touch where people really are. And being a history buff, I think about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, who was shot on a Good Friday, died that next Saturday morning, and thanks to the telegraph, the news spread very quickly. And so I think of all those preachers who had to change their Easter Sunday sermon. In some ways, the sermon wrote itself because Lincoln was like this Christ-like figure who was shot on Good Friday. But still, even then, they felt compelled to significantly change their sermons. And not that it's about me and whatever sermon I write. I feel compelled to change the sermon because something has changed. And I know that people come into the sanctuary with a mixture of anger and fear and grief and all kinds of uneasy feelings. What happened yesterday rattled me, and I'm sure it rattled many others. And what was equally rattling for me was going through Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And in many cases, the rhetoric really frightened me. It was just being turned up. It was often violent and accusatory. And it was frightening. And so in response, I found myself going to Instagram and looking up the accounts of ministers and other writers that I know who would be offering prayers, something that would try to center me, help me get back to peace. And for all of you who are rattled by what happened yesterday, I pray the same for you, that you would find a way to center and find peace. And to me, yesterday's events only underscore the need for radical hospitality that transcends our tribal divisions. Now, we may feel welcomed by the tribe because, quote unquote, these are our people. These are people who get us. But it's always an incomplete welcome. And what if you find yourselves in need of hospitality and you actually wander up to the wrong tribe? What will be offered you then? We need a radical hospitality that doesn't care what tribe you're from, but instead welcomes you exactly as you are. Hospitality in the time of Abraham and Sarah was often a matter of life and death. Whether a traveler was able to get water or food that was needed depended entirely on the hospitality that they received along the journey. And so not only by extending hospitality have some people entertained angels unawares, but quite probably they've saved the lives of angels unawares. It was quite literally a matter of life and death. And I think that for many of us, it's a matter of spiritual life and death. When people walk into a church or tune into the church's live stream on the internet, they may be coming with a mix of heartbreak, of extreme sadness, of a loneliness that seems like it could never be cured. We never know what's really going on in people's lives beneath the surface. And for them, hospitality is quite literally a matter of spiritual life and death. When they come here, will they be fed and nourished at this table or not? And as long as Christ is the host of the table, they will be. As long as Christ is here, the font will always be a never-ending font of welcome and grace. As long as Christ is here, the table is always a welcome table. And I've always found myself inspired by stories of the hospitality of the church at its best, including the stories that Jesus told. When Jesus was accused of being too hospitable by the Pharisees in the Gospel of Luke, they were saying, "You have dinners with tax collectors and prostitutes, and you eat with them. How can you do this?" And so Jesus answered with a story. And he talked about two sons and how the younger son had asked for his inheritance early on and completely blown it, and then came back hoping that he might be a servant. And then the father ran out to meet him, which violated every norm of Middle Eastern decorum. A head of a household would never do that. You always come to the head of the household. Head of the household is not going to risk undermining his own dignity by girding up his loins and running, looking ridiculous to welcome someone. But that's exactly what the father did to the younger son. He ran out and greeted him, kissed him, asked for the finest robes, declared that there would be a feast. It was radical hospitality. And then in the New Testament book of James, which was probably written by the brother of Jesus, who was one of the leaders of the Jerusalem church, early in that epistle, he talks about the situation where someone in fine robes might come into the assembly and someone who is very poor. And he said, "And if you show preference to the one who comes in with fine robes, then woe to you for showing more hospitality to that person than to the person who is extremely poor." And then in the third and fourth century, there was advice given for bishops of the church, sitting as they were in their place of honor in the assembly. And then if someone poor and destitute came in and there was no other place to sit, the bishop was supposed to give up his own seat and welcome that person to that seat. And I think of stories I've heard from time to time. I think of a retired Presbyterian minister and teacher named Bob Lively, who with great vulnerability shared a story about himself as a teenager. He and a friend were walking, this was in the late 1950s. They walked by an outdoor camp revival meeting that a black church was having. And he and his friends began yelling racist epithets, making jokes that they thought would be funny, even making fun of the kind of food that they thought they might be eating at the feast. But before they could walk completely away, the pastor of the church came up to them and said, "It would be our honor if you would stay and eat with us today." And Bob said that the tears just started rolling down his cheeks, and the same with his friend. And it forever changed him. In fact, it was even part of the thing that led him to pursue ordained ministry, so that he could go around ending divisions, preaching grace, making sure that there was always a welcome table. I think of another preacher I admire named Nadia Bowles Weber. Like me, she grew up in the more fundamentalist churches of Christ. And like me, she found grace as she explored different kinds of churches. And she is always one that wanted to reach out to people who have traditionally felt excluded by church. So she herself got tattoos, often of religious icons and so on, but she's as heavily tattooed as any member of a biker gang. She hoped to have a very different kind of church. And so in downtown Denver, her church would worship on Sunday nights. They would invite people who were struggling with addictions or had been struggling with addictions, people, sex workers, people on the streets, people who are houseless. She wanted her church to be a place of welcome. And then what happened as her reputation started to grow, wealthy suburbanites started showing up and attending worship. And she said that this was starting to stretch her own ideas of hospitality. But she realized more and more that she didn't get to choose who came. Christ calls each one of us, regardless of our background, regardless of our culture, regardless of our status, Christ calls each and every one of us. To me, that's the kind of radical hospitality that the church is always called to embody. But we're human. We don't always get it right. Sometimes we get it wrong without realizing it. And I was struck by something that someone said to me a little over a year ago, comparing what would happen if you came back to the church after having been gone for a very long time versus what would happen if you came back to an AA meeting that you had visited years before, maybe only went once or twice and then never come back. And he said at the AA meeting, people simply welcome you back without any questions asked. But sometimes in the church, people will say, well, where have you been? It's about time you came back. And that might be subtle, but it can make a big difference. And may our welcome be more like that AA meeting. And I'm sure that not every AA meeting is quite that welcoming, because again, we're all human. But may the church be a place of welcoming everyone without shaming anyone in the process. It doesn't matter whether you've been gone only for a week or for 30 years. May the church assembly and gathering just be a place of unconditional welcome and grace. The word xenos in Greek can be translated stranger, guest, or host, which is a way of saying that you never know which one you're going to be. Maybe you'll be the guest, maybe you'll be the host, and maybe you'll be the stranger. And knowing that encourages you to think about your own hospitality as it might be seen through the eyes of a stranger, as it might be experienced by a stranger. Sometimes this happens in subtle ways. One time someone complained to me about the Lord's Prayer being printed out in the bulletin and how I was insulting her intelligence because she'd had it memorized since she was a girl. And all I could think to say was, well, with all due respect, the bulletin isn't for you necessarily. It's for someone who might be a first-time guest and who might not know that prayer. And then they can follow along with us in worship. And since you already know it, you don't have to look at it. You can simply recite it. So in subtle and great ways, we can always revisit our hospitality, think through it, receive criticism without getting defensive, and simply do all that we can to embody the welcome that we ourselves have received from Christ. There's a country music supergroup called the Highway Women. Actually, the High Women, I think, is what they're called. And they're modeled after the Highwaymen of Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, and Johnny Cash. But their voices are tremendous together. And my favorite song that they sing is a song called Crowded Table. And in the chorus, they sing, I want a house with a crowded table and a place by the fire for everyone. And more these days, that's my dream for the church. May we be a place with a crowded table and a place by the fire for everyone. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.